Philo is Ilfrey Stratford as well. 9-11-3.
Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning and welcome to Racing Across America on this Sunday morning, the day after, as it were, the day after the Preakness, leg number two of the Triple Crown. No shot at a Triple Crown this year as it works out, but still another fun weekend of racing. I mean, 2 weeks ago down at Churchill, it was two great days of racing, and they continued that at Pimlico Friday and Saturday. And I thought we'd go wall-to-wall Pimlico today. A little bit later on, we'll be joined by our friend Steve Bick. He was down in Baltimore covering the race in the week, covering up the week leading into the Preakness. So we'll talk a little Pimlico weekend with Bick coming up a little bit later on, but also plugged into the weekend and plugged into Maryland racing all year long, our friend Frank Vespi from theracingbiz.com. They do a great job covering racing down in the Mid-Atlantic, and so I had to reach out to Frank and get his thoughts on the weekend. Frank, good morning.
Morning, Seth. Good to be with you.
Good to have you on board. And before we get to the races specifically, I'm curious. Bick was down at Churchill, and I had Tim Wilkin yesterday. He was down at Churchill a couple of weeks ago. And with these first two legs of the Triple Crown, we're now seeing fans back on track. And I'm curious your perspective on the last couple of days, because I know you've been going to the races for the past year as a member of the press, but I'm assuming that was the biggest crowd you've seen in the past year. And certainly up here at Saratoga, where it's so fluid there, we're still kind of wondering how it's all going to work out when we get up here. But I'm curious how it worked out over Friday and Saturday down at Pimlico, and are there any lessons the rest of the racing game can take away from the weekend?
I thought it worked out well. I mean, they were limited to 10,000, which is not a big crowd at Pimlico. I mean, you know, they get, for traditional Preaknesses, they get 130,000 or something, and a facility, you know, it's an old, big facility. 10,000 gets swallowed up pretty easily there. Having said that, I said to somebody yesterday, it started to feel kind of Preaknessy. Like, you had people there, you know, they were dressed up. There were, you know, women in hats and men in suits. Many of them had Maryland flags on them, so that was a little goofy. But you know, it just started to feel a little Preaknessy, but without kind of the giant circus. And everybody I talked to, you know, I was on WBAL, which is the NBC TV affiliate in Baltimore, and I was talking with the people there, and they were saying the same thing. Like, last year was so weird, and now this year starts to feel like we're getting back to normalcy. And so it was really a good day. As for lessons, I don't know. I think it's all, you know, sort of individualized, and I think, you know, we'll have to see what comes out of this. But I think, you know, as more people get vaccinated, as we get this thing under a little bit better control, we can start to go back to having normal life again. And that's a pretty cool thing.
Yeah, like I say, we're keeping our fingers crossed up here at Saratoga. There will certainly be some fans in attendance, but it's so fluid. It changes, it seems like, day by day what the number will be and whatnot. But it was nice to see. And same yesterday and the day before, 2 weeks ago down at Churchill, you could get even the excitement through the TV screen that the fans were back, and that was nice. And over the past couple of days down at Pimlico, the same. Let me ask you another question, just, you know, overarching on the weekend before we talk racing in particular. Obviously, I said, two really great days of racing down at Churchill a couple of weeks ago. And then a week ago, exactly a week ago today, the life was kind of sucked out of the room with the Baffert announcement. I'm curious, it was racing, it seemed like, as I talked to people, that was a big story at the beginning of the week, and it's not that it's not still a big story, but it seemed like over the past couple of days, everybody was focusing more in on the racing, which Pimlico deserved because they put two great days of racing together. Was the Baffert story alive all week long, or was racing able to elevate a little bit as you got closer and closer to Friday and Saturday?
Well, I guess let me say, first of all, really kudos to the Maryland Jockey Club people for the race cards they put on. You know, Jillian Tulloch is the racing secretary and Trish Bowman is stakes coordinator. Particularly Friday was an absolute blockbuster card. Yes, the Preakness sort of carries that car, the Saturday card, but Friday's card was tremendous and record handle both days. So kudos to them. In terms of the Baffert story, honestly, I don't think it went away. I think there was a little bit of holding your breath and waiting to see what was going to happen here. And I started to write a column, you know, a couple days ago, but I didn't have time to really do it. Really saying it was sort of peak horse racing, because here it was, Baffert was had created this whole debacle that was around the Triple Crown that really was threatening to swallow the Triple Crown. And here he is coming into Pimlico, and he's got the favorite in the Black Eyed Susan and the favorite in the Sir Barton and the favorite in the Preakness and the second favorite in the Preakness. And what could be more horse racing than the guy under this cloud wins all the big races? And then it turns around and he doesn't win any of them. And most of his horses don't run well. And I got to say, I'm not a believer, but it felt a little karmic. It felt a little like the racing gods were saying, you know what, enough of you for the time being. So I think that the good news is, by his not winning, I think we can really focus and just talk about the racing and put that thing to bed, at least for the time being.
Yeah, it will play out certainly and still be in the news. I mean, when Saturday Night Live is compelled to parody Bob Baffert on their news segment, the racing game doesn't really, it's not in a good spot for a while. But again, two great days of racing, and I want to focus on those. And as you say, given the situation, maybe as we lead into the Belmont Stakes and whatnot too, we can focus more and more on racing. But let's get to it. Let's talk a little Preakness. We're going to watch coming around the turn into the stretch. I liked Midnight Bourbon. Medina Spirit is going to be the number 3 horse. Midnight Bourbon, the number 5. About mid-stretch, I thought I was in good spot with Midnight Bourbon. But I played a bankroll promotion for folks here at the Racebook yesterday. I did not use Rombauer in my selections, but I put him into a triple play when I had that bankroll promotion, because I thought if things fall apart, Rombauer and risk-taking stand a chance to pick up the pieces, and we're watching Rombauer come under the wire there. Chart margin is over 3 lengths. Midnight Bourbon second, Medina Spirit third, Keep Me in Mind fourth. I was surprised. The betting surprised me. Talked about it with a few people all week long. I was curious. I thought people might, like me, be skeptical of Medina Spirit. If they were, I thought they'd go to Concert Tour. But they went to my horse, because Friday betting and most of the day on Saturday, Midnight Bourbon was the favorite. It was really up until we got to post time that the favoritism tilted towards Medina Spirit. So I was a little surprised by the betting as well. But give me your thoughts on the Preakness at 11-1. Rombauer gets it done.
Certainly the betting was a surprise. I it was unclear to me why people. I got why people would like Midnight Bourbon at an appropriate price. It was really unclear to me why people were willing to take 2-3-1 on a horse that got his head kicked in Kentucky by Medina Spirit. But the biggest mystery of all was people were betting on Ram, Ram could have stayed in the barn and had an equal chance of winning the Preakness as he did by being on the racetrack. And the fact that he got bet down off a 30-1 morning line and he was like around 12-1 close to post time was baffling to me. But having said all that, the terrific performance by Rombauer. I didn't like Rombauer. I didn't use Rombauer. He ran great. Absolutely a terrific ride by Flavian Pratt there, too. I mean, he put this horse in a perfect spot. And, you know, in these races, you usually get, you know, a little bit stopped, a little bit checked, got to come around a horse, whatever. He just had a completely smooth trip, just a perfect trip for that horse. And he was tons the best. Yesterday, I liked Keep Me in Mind, who did what he does, came along way too late. I had thought the pace would be fast. I thought it would be tough on the leaders, and it sort of was and sort of wasn't. But Rombauer clearly the best, and I Teresa Gennaro wrote on the racingbiz.com, you know, we called the article Rombauer Spells Relief in the Preakness, and he, you know, everybody kind of breathed a sigh of relief. Rombauer wins. It's a good race. No Bob Baffert. Let's go forward.
Yeah, and interesting also that earlier this year in his seasonal debut, he won the El Camino Real Derby. So he was a win-in-your-in horse, too, which was kind of intriguing. Subsequently followed up with the third in the Bluegrass, but in the third start back, takes advantage of that chit he won out at Golden Gate to move on to the Preakness. So that was a good little program they had working as well.
Yeah, it is interesting because these horses that have come out of the win-in-your-in races, you know, they've been sort of second-tier horses like Rombauer, but obviously that paid off, and I think that speaks well to that program. Interesting side note here is John Fradkin, who is the breeder and owner of this horse, said that he and Michael McCarthy, the trainer, had what he called a heated discussion. McCarthy wanted to go to the Kentucky Derby. They had enough points to go. Fradkin said, no, I want to go to the Preakness. I feel like it's an easier spot. I feel like we're maybe not quite ready for the Derby just yet, but a couple more weeks and I think we'll be good for the Preakness. And eventually the owner wins those conversations if he really wants to, and that turns out to be the right decision, clearly.
Yeah, very good. Grade one, $1 million purse. He makes the right move there, no question about it. Let's go a little earlier on the card. Pull up the dinner party grade two event on the grass just before the Preakness. Wanted to show this one because nice New York bred, Some Like It Hot Brown. I have that one right underneath. I took the shot with Sacred Life, who wound up to be the 6-5 favorite and winds up a disappointing fourth. But it was a nice ride by Jose Ortiz, a nice win for, again, the New York bred Some Like It Hot Brown, getting it done as the second choice at 5-2. Running second will be Talk or Listen. Midnight Tea runs third. But again, the New York bred gets it done. Second start of the season after disappointing seventh in the Maker's Mark Mile. But that is always a salty race. Nice little comeback to good form, though, there under the wire of the chart margin of a length in the dinner party for Some Like It Hot Brown.
Yeah, that was a really good effort. And that was sort of the exclamation point on Mike Maker's weekend here in Pimlico. Four graded stakes wins he has. He wins the Black Eyed Susan. He wins the Pimlico Special. He wins this race and one other, which escapes me because there's so many of them. But I like this horse. I'm like it hot brown. This was a really nice effort. Kind of another one who sat a really good trip off the speed, you know, kind of reeled in the speed when he wanted. Worth noting here, new track record. There were two turf track records set at Pimlico this weekend. He does mile and a 16th and 140.09, which is racehorse time. It was a really good effort, and you kind of think this horse might be able to move back in a little bit better company even.
You kind of led in perfectly to the Maryland Sprint, because that was the other Mike Maker win. It is Special Reserve with Irod Ortiz on board, over Strike Power. I took a little shot in here with Breezy Gust, who I thought might get overlooked coming in from Parks. But that one winds up getting pulled up. They're off, you lose, unfortunately. But Special Reserve was in my mix for Mike Maker and Irod Ortiz off a second in the Commonwealth at Keeneland last time at 7. Cuts back to the 6, wins by a length and 3/4, as I'm just looking at his second choice, paying $9.80. The favorite was Strike Power. He makes a little bit of a late run here, but no challenge for the winner. Frosted Grace third. So as you say, Special Reserve adding yet another win on the weekend to Mike Maker.
Yeah, it's good to be Mike Maker, clearly. this was a horse that they claimed for $40,000 three races ago. And you turn around and win a grade three stakes with him a couple races later. That's working out pretty well. I had thought of this race as a race where there would be a lot of speed, and horses running mid-pack like a Lakai would really be in a good spot. And that turned out not to be the case. This horse, you know, was right up front, right up close early on, and stayed there the whole way around.
Yeah, nice job. Turf Sprint, race 10 on the card on Saturday. Fire Crow gets it done. A horse I did not have in my mix at all, but it's one of those I could have kicked myself. This time of year, every year, there's maybe – 5 or 6 weeks where I say, take a look at the Oakland shippers. Wherever they go, that Oakland track seems to add some fitness and some form, and they do wear very well. That's been playing out at various tracks again this year. That was the angle. You could have wound up with $21 and change with Firecrow. Firecrow gets it done as the number 11 horse. Number 4, The Critical Way, runs second. That's the one I used, and that was the favorite. Running third is going to be Completed Pass. But it's Firecrow, Joel Rosario on board for Ron Moquette.
Yeah, this is another track record, one of the two track records on the day, 55.30 for 5/8 of a mile, also moving out there. It's a race they run a lot. I mean, that's a distance they run a lot, and including stakes races. So a pretty legitimate effort here. I didn't use this horse, and his turf form was a little spotty. He'd run one pretty good race, but hadn't won. Turf resume, but this was a really good effort and wore down the leader to get the money. One horse sort of worth a note in your sort of handicapping is Completed Pass, who broke slow and was really put behind the eight ball, but rallied in the third, and I think ran a really good race for a horse that didn't win.
Yeah, the first couple of chart calls, sitting there last, and does get up for a nice third in a field of 13. That's a good result. Let's move on to the Skipat. Sprinters going 6, and you and I were talking before we went on the air. Winner here that certainly will be worth watching going forward. I took a little pop with the French umpire. That one really disappointed, as the second choice winds up last in the field of 7. I had Chubb Wagon right underneath, however, and I was saying to you before we went on the air, given the way the track was playing Friday, early Saturday, with that early speed, the betting public, no dummies amongst the betting public. That one went off as a 6-5 favorite. Didn't go right to the lead, though. Was kind of sitting and stalking a little off the front runners. Chubb Wagon is going to be the number 5 here. Casual, the number 2 second. Club Car, the 1 third. But Chubb Wagon gets it done. Now 6-6 in the career.
Yeah, I mean, to me, she looks like a star here. She'd been, killing horses at Parks and won her first 5 there. And you could, fairly say, okay, but what is she really beating? But, okay, here she comes in. And first off, she does something she's never done before. She's always broken right to the lead and gone on to win that way. This time she breaks well, but then I think it was Irad who was up, or was it Jose? But one of the Ortiz brothers, Irad, takes her back and settles her in third, down on the rail, behind horses, catching dirt for the first time. No problem. She tips out near in the head of the lane, goes on, wins easily. She looks like a star to me. I mean, this is a real racehorse right here.
Yeah, this is a 4-year-old filly, so we'll be knocking heads in that filly mare sprint division. And 6-6, as you say, kind of stepped out and got her class test yesterday, passed successfully. And so we'll see where she winds up next. But 6-6, always intriguing, those kind of horses. Jim Murphy, Mile on the Grass. The winner is going to be TD Dance. I like that one, had it right underneath originally, but the horse I had on top scratched, so I moved up into TD Dance as a winner. 4-5 favorite, and gets it done at $3.80 under Javier Castellano, a Brad Cox trainee. Running second, Arzak. Charles Chrome runs third in here. Chart margin's going to wind up to be just under 4 lengths, though. Pretty nice run from TD Dance in the Murphy. In that subdivision, I like 3-year-olds on the turf. I think it's fun to follow all year long, and you would have to think off of, yesterday's win. This horse fairly lightly raced, but should be a player in that division as the year progresses.
Yeah, that was a good-looking win. I thought that was one of the more visually grabbing victories yesterday. Really a nice-looking win, and the Brad Cox runners, they go everywhere, and they win everywhere, so no surprise there. And this is obviously a horse, talking about the 3-year-old turf division. I was talking with Nick Hahn. This is the kind of horse that they will be, the folks at Colonial Downs will be trying to get out for the Virginia Derby, among other races.
Yeah, and again, that's one of those races. I always say it, that subdivision of 3-year-old turfers, there are just nice spots for them all year long, and it winds up, it seemed like year in and year out, be a nice fun division, and then every once in a while a bunch of them get together in one of these races. Certainly the Hall of Fame up at Saratoga we look forward to every year, so it should be a lot of fun with T.D. Vance getting in a little spot amongst the conversation there. The Gallarette yesterday, wanted to pull this one up because I kicked myself. I used to feel glorious in here. Once again, I wind up last with my top pick, and the second pick gets it done. And I kicked myself afterwards. I just wondered, would Mean Mary be at her best in this, or would it be kind of a stepping stone to bigger things this year? But, you know, in a short field, you have a horse with some early speed. It's always dangerous. And classy speed like this, Mean Mary goes out, takes him all the way around as the 4-5 favorite. Luis Saez on board for Grand Motion. Vigilante's Way makes a little run for Shug and Company, but can't do any better than second, and Great Island third. But it was a nice performance from really, really classy five-year-old mare, Mean Mary.
Yeah, you've got to think it's going to be back to Grade One Company pretty shortly for this one. And a really good ride by Saez, you know, just gets out and walks the dog, and they go slow. And, you know, it was after a half mile, you said there's if she's even close to right, there's no way they're going to reel her in after this. And that's exactly what happened. And, you know, a couple of horses behind her were running at the end, but she wasn't coming back even a little bit.
Yeah, that was a pretty solid comeback effort. So, as you say, we'll look for her to face better as we go forward. And that's what I was expecting, but I was thinking, yeah, this will be a tightener. Yeah, she was tight already. She didn't need the tightener. And I didn't call up replays, but I'll just mention earlier on the day, the Chick Lang and the Sir Barton. The Sir Barton may be notable because, as you say, started the day off with a loss for Bob Baffert, with Hoosier running second to the King Cheek. But the one that is more intriguing to me is the Chick Lang. Mighty Mischief wins over Jackson Traveler. Jackson Traveler, nice little runner for West Point. And I thought off the Bachelor at Oaklawn, Jackson Traveler might be tough in here. But Mighty Mischief got it done in the Chick Lang. Just to add another really nice sprinter on the Steve Asmussen resume over the past two or three years. I mean, he has had a barn full of just amazing sprinters. And this one now, three wins and four starts. Mighty Mischief, just another one in the Asmussen barn.
Yeah, you know, two interesting things here. One that you mentioned a minute ago is the use of Oaklawn as a place to prep and tighten. And Asmussen has said, he told me a couple of years ago that he really likes to come from Oaklawn to Pimlico because he thinks they're similar surfaces. He thinks the racing at Oaklawn really sets his horses up to do well when they come to Pimlico on Preakness weekend. And the results bear that out. He has done very well on Preakness weekend at Pimlico over the last few years, including in the Chick Lang Stakes. I wrote this on the racingbiz.com. There's no truth to the rumor that he actually owns this race, but it sure feels that way. He's won the last two, three of the last four, four of the last seven, and five overall. He has been absolutely the dominant player in this race. And you know, not as you said, some really good sprinters. He had Yao Pan win this last year and go up as the favorite in the Breeders' Cup Sprint. A couple of years ago, Mitoli won this, and a year after that, he won the Breeders' Cup Sprint. So he's bringing real horses here and taking this race year after year. So you certainly, I think, a pretty good effort from Jackson Traveler. Asmussen felt like it might have been a little fast-backed for him from his last start. It was just 3 weeks ago, I think. But take nothing away from Mighty Mischief. He looks like he's going to be a player now, too.
Yeah, and given the history you just reeled off, we'll have to watch him as the year progresses, certainly. Not a surprise, again, given what Asmussen has done with these sprinters over the last few years. All right, let's go back to Friday and get some thoughts there. Black-Eyed Susan Day. Going back to a couple of weeks ago in the Derby, I thought Mandaloon was going to go by the whole stretch. I had Mandaloon. I thought he was going by the whole stretch.
He looked like it.
Yeah, a little bit of a replay for me in the Black-Eyed Susan. I took a little pop at 13-1 with Willful Woman, the number two horse. And as we'll see, that there were a few, right here, as we pick it up, I think, oh, I'm going by. I'm going to be in a good spot. We're getting a little momentum here, and I'm going to, and then it's just about three strides later, and Army Wife's not coming back. Army Wife, the number one, gets it done. Willful Woman, second. Lady Traveler for the folks at West Point Thoroughbred runs third. I think all three of these are going to be nice players in this three-year-old Philly division. Certainly Army White, but I thought Willful Woman being lightly raced, this was a pretty good second stake of the career for her. I drew a line through the Honeybee 2 back and was kind of expecting a better performance, and it was. So I thought all three of these, as I say, could be players in this three-year-old Philly division going forward.
Yeah, I did Mike Maker win anything on the weekend? I can't remember. I mean, holy smokes. So, yeah, this horse ran huge here. A funny side, sort of personal note. So my friend Leon calls me early in the day on Friday, and I couldn't pick it up. He says, call me ASAP. Okay, it must be important. So I call him, and he was just calling to tell me he owns a piece of Lady Traveler. So good for Leon and good for the West Point people, Lady Traveler. Runs huge, actually. Ran a really good race, goes out to the front, which was where you wanted to be. I mean, the strip was, particularly Friday, but also Saturday to some extent, was playing kind of old school Pimlico, inside speed, and that's what they did. They sent the horse, she went right to the lead, and she stayed on pretty well. So that was a good effort for them, but Army Wife, huge. Huge effort.
Yeah, very nice. Third start of the season. She had won the seasonal debut, then a third in the Gazelle, and then wins this one. And it's one of those, I talk about it quite a bit on the handicapping show, and if you look at her PPs, it's a perfect example. Sometimes two-year-olds, when they're lightly raced, they'll get a little break, they'll come back the three-year-old season, and they're just improved with a little time off and added maturity. I think she's the perfect example of that if you look at the PPs. Let's move a little earlier, the Pimlico Special. Speaking of Mike Maker, he went 2 for 2 to wind up the day at Pimlico. Wins the Pimlico Special with number 11, Last Judgment. I had that one underneath. I when I handicapped, I wanted to find an alternative to Fearless, and I just couldn't get past the last couple of starts, but he does run third. Number 11, Last Judgment wins. Modernist runs second. Fearless runs third. Cordmaker, the Maryland based horse, runs fourth. Modernist is one of those, boy, Jekyll and Hyde. You don't know what to do with this horse exactly, but he was a good second in there, again, holding off Fearless for the second place position. But it is Last Judgment getting it done. Mike Maker, Jose Ortiz.
It's Mike Maker's world. We're just living in it. This way, you know, this horse was breaking from the 11, and I was really curious. Obviously, he wanted to be on the lead or up close, and you just wondered how he was going to navigate it with some other horses with some early speed inside of him. He broke like an absolute rocket out of there, and he was clear almost immediately. And so once he did that, and Jose Ortiz talked about this later, he was like, well, we had talked about it. We'd said, if we break and we go to the lead, great. If not, we'll sit off whoever broke better. And you know, the horse decided what he wanted right away. He just broke like a rocket right to the front and never came back and ran a big race. So certainly a good effort for him and Mike Maker. Why not?
Yeah.
Why not Mike Maker?
Yeah, Mike Maker. Nice weekend for him. Friday was a nice day for John Velasquez, certainly, who kind of continued what he did Derby weekend. So that was nice to see as well on the human side of things. Grand Motion, however, in the Hilltop a little bit earlier on the card on Friday. And John, the aforementioned John Velasquez, get it done in the Hilltop, a mile on the grass for the three-year-old fillies. Alda is going to be the number three horse in here. I could not make this horse out. At 7-1, got a little action on the board. You can see here kind of separating from a real scrum there, but the chart margin does wind up to be a neck. Second was Seasons by a nose over Arm Candy. So it was a ding-dong finish there. But it was a nice run from Alda. I saw Grand Motion was interviewed in the winner's circle afterwards. They were coming out of a seasonal debut in a sprint stake at Keeneland. And he said, you know, we think she can sprint, but, you know, didn't do much that day. But it really benefited her to stretch out to the mile back on Friday. And, you know, it was a nice win for Alda.
Yeah, for sure. I tend to find the Hilltop as a race kind of inscrutable. I tend to look at this race. It's kind of year after year. It's like, okay, here's every horse in here ran a 78 buyer last time out. What do I do with this? And this was kind of one of those. But yeah, it's certainly, you know, you get this is a horse they have liked all along. You know, they put her in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies turf. Not a great result there. they bring her back sprinting, you know, get the tightener that you were talking about, Mean Mary maybe getting in the race that she won on Saturday. They actually give this one the real tightener in a sprint stake. Now stretch her out, and she was good to go.
The Miss Preakness a little bit earlier for three-year-old filly Sprinters. Another one where I was a little surprised at the betting. Red Ghost, the Wesley Ward runner, number two with John Velasquez on board. Again, really nice weekend again for Velasquez. But Red Ghost gets it done and went off as the favorite. 5-1 on the morning line. But credit to the betting public. They nail it here. Number eight, Euphoric, second. Number nine, Joyful Cadence, third. Again, another ding-dong finish. Again, kind of continuing the theme from a couple of weeks ago. There were some really nice finishes at Churchill. That kind of continued in a few of the races at Pimlico over a fun weekend of racing. But it is Velasquez, Red Ghost, Wesley Ward getting it done. And as I say, hats off to the betting public, making this one a 2-1 favorite. I thought the horse was a contender. I was not using it on top, however.
Yeah, I mean, this 2-1 seemed a little aggressive. I mean, this felt like a pretty wide open group of horses to me. But this one had the local hopeful and Street Loot, who had been kind of beating up the local horses in all the $100,000 stakes around here. And she finished fifth, kind of an indifferent effort. You say there were all these good races. There really were. Friday, it was like every race seemed to be head bobbing on the wire, and this was one of them, and it was a terrific race.
Yeah, absolutely. Wanted to get to the very one on Friday at Pimlico, and in fact, I talked to you a little bit off the air before we fired up, because I would assume you would have a little insight in this, being, again, racing biz, concentrating on Maryland racing, and Elizabeth Merriman, not only the trainer and owner, but the breeder of Caravelle. And she's kind of based down there in the Mid-Atlantic to some extent. And Caravelle gets it done, the number three horse here, as the 2-1 favorite, just by a nose. Yet another ding-dong finish. Number 12, Gotta Go Mo, second. Number five, Victory Kingdom, third. But again, watching her in the winner's circle afterwards, these are always great stories. I mean, you know, not a big outfit by any means, but owner, trainer, breeder, and then you wind up on one of the biggest days in your neck of the woods, and you get a nice stakes win. So hats off to everybody involved with Caravelle.
Yeah, for sure. The Merriman family is kind of, as we were talking about before, royalty's probably not the word in Maryland horse racing, but in Mid-Atlantic racing, they are one of the kind of long time stalwart families of Mid-Atlantic racing. And Lizzie's based in Pennsylvania. There's Ann Merriman and Katie Voss and Edwin Merriman and Lewis Merriman. They're all in Maryland. So that there's kind of Merrimans all over the place. And they've had a lot of success and a lot of good horses over the years. In fact, a horse you might be familiar with is Faya. That's horse that Ann Merriman bred and had won a couple races with, and then they sold. And Lizzie a few years ago had the horse that whose name escapes me, but won the Maryland Million Turf, I think 2 years in a row. So she's had some pretty good horses. This is certainly among them.
Yeah, that was, as I say, a nice winner, one of the nice stories. And finally, let's take a look at the DuPont, because here was one I had on top, and I was excited to kind of see what Spices Nice would do. Spices Nice, in a couple of stakes tries last year, faltered, but they were behind Swiss Skydiver. I just thought, given what she did in the first start this year, maybe she'd come back as an improved four-year-old. She was getting that test on Friday in the DuPont, mile and an eighth for the fillies and mares. Number three, Spices Nice, does get it done. Another win for John Velasquez. This one for Todd Pletcher. Dream a Little Dream of You, second. Get Rid of What Ails You, third. But again, and Horologist, the 8-5 favorite, a little bit of a disappointing fourth in the field. I should mention that. But I think in this division now, Spices Nice is kind of proven as a four-year-old. She may have come back as an improved performer and deserves to be put in these kind of stakes positions for Pletcher and company.
Yeah, I mean, she, as you pointed out, her past performances were very interesting because, you know, when I use this analogy someplace else, you know, she's like the little girl with the little curl. When she's been good, she's been very good. And when she's been bad, she has been horrid. And her couple of stakes tries were really awful. But as you said, against, you know, A-level competition, this is not an A-level race. And she took a nice step forward. This This is the sort of effort you think, okay, you know, maybe there's a chance you move back into bigger, you know, kind of better company. But this was a very good effort. And I think this was a legitimate field. I mean, Horologist is a good horse, a multiple graded winner who ran in the Breeders' Cup Distaff last year. Get Rid of What Ails You, Another Broad, you know, Dream a Little Dream. These are pretty good horses. And so this was, I feel like, as you said, this was a nice step forward for this horse.
Yeah, and a good confidence builder, you would have to think, as well. So we'll see what happens as she picks her next spot in the division. Frank, as always, we appreciate the visit. I'll tout once again people to stop by theracingbiz.com, catch up on all the weekend action at Pimlico, and throughout the year follow Maryland Racing. And again, it was fun to see some fans on track, so I'm knocking wood that that'll be the case as Maryland moves forward, and certainly we're hoping for that to be the case more and more up here when we get to Saratoga. But it was nice to see over the weekend, really great couple of days of racing down at Pimlico.
Yeah, thank you, Seth. And as I go out, I will say maybe the coolest moment of the weekend was the start of the Preakness to once again hear the roar of the crowd as the horses left the gate. That was cool.
No question about it. Frank, appreciate the visit. We'll talk again.
Thanks, Seth. Much appreciated.
Frank Vespi from theracingbiz.com. Again, great place to check out Maryland and Mid-Atlantic racing and more. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we will be joined by my summertime colleague, Steve Bick, loose on the lead. We have that up at Saratoga, but all year long, he is the voice of At the Races on Sirius and XM Radio, and he's been down at Baltimore, at Pimlico in Baltimore this past week. So we'll get some of his thoughts on the weekend. All of that right after this.
Where's the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you, where's the best sports bar in the capital region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the clubhouse racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
The Capital Region has some of the most sophisticated horse racing fans in the country. That's why Capital OTB built the Clubhouse Racebook. Here you can wager year-round on the best horse racing from around the world. The Clubhouse also has monthly promotions including live bankrolls, handicapping contests, and so much more. Like sports? Watch your favorite teams on more than 30 screens in Legends Field Sports Grill. Food, sports, and the excitement of championship horse racing only at the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. As promised before the break, joined now by Steve Bick, SiriusXM's At the Races. He's been down in Baltimore and at Pimlico in the week leading up to Black Eyed Susan and Preakness. Steve, good morning.
Seth, good morning. Good morning, everybody.
When I talked to you on the radio the other day, you expected to be in the Waffle House. You're the Waffle House parking lot?
We are way past Waffle House. In fact, we're at the base of 9W.
Okay.
Yeah. We blew out early this morning, and now we'll take our Hudson Valley tour kind of leisurely from here home.
And I, when you say we, you're referring to your lovely wife, Tina, I'm assuming. And I think we have some pictures of you and Tina enjoying Preakness Week down there. And I asked you on the radio the other day, are you a crab cake guy? And you said yes. And so how were the crab cakes this week?
It was a good week. It was a good week for crab cakes. We had Michael's in Timonium, went over toward, you know, to the sales grounds. They'll be selling the two-year-olds tomorrow and Tuesday at Timonium, and everybody goes to Michael's. Also, Corner Stable, which is just up the road from Michael's, so both very good. Corner has a little added bonus of ribs. We also got to G&M. I got down to G&M in Linthicum Heights for a crab cake there as well, and also got to Pioneer for pit beef sandwiches twice, not once, but twice. It's a good week. It was a good week on the eating front.
Very good. I will say, I was listening to your, he was on just before me. It was a tough following, Leon Blusewicz, on the radio show on Wednesday. Oh. But you gave out his crab cake recipe, which I may have to try. But for some reason in my head, when you said you got to use the club crackers, I'm picturing in my head those, I don't know why, but those little crackers you have with chowder. And you said, yeah, so you pull four of those out. And I'm thinking, pull four? That doesn't seem like. But then it dawned on, as you talked a little more, you said the sleeve, and you were talking like regular size. I'm thinking, four of those.
The club cracker brand, used to be Keebler.
Yeah.
Now it's Kellogg's. But yeah, you take the sleeve, you take four of them out, and you crunch up the rest. That's a very good crab cake recipe.
Yeah,
Tina has decided it's time to move, so we're moving, I guess. And I hope, and nobody gets car sick. Take some Dramamine.
Easy. Let's get into it. Let's get into the weekend. Before we get to the races, though, again, we'll ask. We checked in with you as far as Churchill. I'll ask you Pimlico as well, because I said it earlier on the show. We're all wondering how things are going to work out at Saratoga and what lessons can be learned. Crowds on track Friday and Saturday down at Pimlico. What was it like as compared to last year? And you know, are there lessons to be learned from what they did down at Pimlico?
It's hard to say. They had a very defined set of options in terms of seating and ticketing. It seemed to go very well. We were in the big tent yesterday, the big long turf terrace tent. You know, I didn't go. I didn't go down in October. There was virtually no attendance, obviously, last year for Preakness. And this was a little bit more limited than what was going on at Churchill. But they did a very nice job, too. Very well handled. Everybody's respectful and taking care with the masks. And when you sit down to eat, very, very nicely done.
Yeah, and it seemed like, and again, it was fun to get a little juice of the crowd coming through the TV screen as we did a couple of weeks ago. Let's talk about it. Preakness yesterday, I said earlier, I did not use Ron Bauer in my mix, but I had a bankroll promotion yesterday, and I played a triple into the race, and I threw him and risk-taking in, thinking, you know, if the pace falls apart, either one of those may pick up the pieces, and Ron Bauer does get it done. We'll watch the stretch run, the number six horse. Midnight Bourbon is the horse I used. He ran a good second, number five, and Medina Spirit winds up third. Keep Me in Mind winds up fourth. I was a little surprised at the betting in that Friday and most of the day on Saturday, Midnight Bourbon was the favorite. Didn't revert to second choice until really as they got close to the race. So I was a little surprised by that. I thought the alternative would be Concert Tour, but the betting public leaned a little bit on Midnight Bourbon until, as I say, late when Medina Spirit became the favorite. But Rombauer gets it done, $25 and change. Your impressions of the Preakness?
There's a few things to deal with here. First of all, they're leading into the race, you were dealing with seemingly a gold rail.
Yeah.
I mean, the inside was so dominant on Friday, seemed a little bit less so on Saturday, but that didn't really become clear until about midway, through the card. And obviously, there was a lot of turf racing, so you really were kind of watching to see how the main track changed. And you also watch, we're watching jockeys to see where they were positioning themselves on the racetrack. So I can tell you that from a anticipation standpoint, not even worried about the betting right this second, in this for the purpose of the discussion, it sure felt like you were expecting horses that were on or near the lead to have the advantage. And so the late runners, principally, Keep Me in Mind, Rombauer, you mentioned Risk Taking, they were horses that I thought from Friday night into Saturday were going to be a little compromised. And certainly Medina Spirit, if the race is run on Friday, Medina Spirit from the three hole on the rail probably gets carried a little bit further. It was interesting about the wagering and how late in the betting on Saturday the favoritism moved from Midnight Bourbon to Medina Spirit. And it was late. It was It was around the time that the Dixie went off, the dinner party. And then at one point I looked up and you could see it was tightening. And even the double, the interesting thing was that the Black Eyed Susan Preakness double even indicated that Midnight Bourbon was going to be favored. And I think what happened was as Medina Spirit was sitting, anywhere from 4-1 to 7-2, it felt like he's the horse to beat. And this is a pretty good value. So I think some money gravitated in that direction kind of logically. And really the race unfolded logically in that Midnight Bourbon, with the switch to Irad Ortiz, was more aggressively handled, instantly involved with Medina Spirit, and essentially the race went about a half a second faster in the early stages than the Derby, and that's the whole race right there. And the two of them end up vulnerable off the top of the stretch. Rombauer got a fabulous ride from Flavian Pratt, who made sure to keep him within striking distance. He actually was smart to lay off early when he was sitting, must have been sitting about seventh, maybe eighth.
Nope.
Didn't make the kind of advance that Otis had, kind of shot the gap the way, what's her name did last year, a Swiss Skydiver, kind of charged up inside and even further prompted the pace. At that point, halfway on the backstretch. Meanwhile, the two of them, Medina Spirit and Midnight Bourbon, they're engaged in a spirited battle, which was very different than what Medina Spirit was having happen in the Derby, when he was able to really kind of relax. And that's the difference. They come off the turn, Midnight Bourbon engages and Midnight takes over at a certain point there between the eighth pole and the 16th pole, but he absolutely is left vulnerable to Rombauer, who actually was being ridden. It's not as if Flavian Pratt was just kind of sitting chilly on the turn. He was riding and he was pushing Rombauer. Rombauer's basically kicked in at the top of the stretch and wins easy at that point because the two leaders, they had basically exhausted each other. So this was a real pace scenario. Some of the things that, we anticipated, I think Concert Tour, ended up not being persevered with early. He, everybody talked. The key to both Concert Tour and Medina Spirit was who was going to get the lead. And, you know, Johnny, you can pretty much count on Johnny being aggressive. And Concert Tour stunk. I mean, Edsel Horst absolutely has to have things his own way. There's no question at this point that that's what he is. And I don't think he wants to go that far anyway. But he was just dreadful, never involved. So, I think the race, unfolded in a way that was fairly easy to understand. I think there were a couple of other horses that could have played the Rombauer role. Crowded Trade, I think he'll be primed to turn back to a shorter distance, elongated mile. We'll see what Chad does with him. Those were really the principles. Keep me in mind, he started a little bit too slowly. He ran the same kind of race that he ran in the Derby, where, you know, he had a very sluggish opening quarter, then engaged. Rombauer and Flavian Pratt and Michael McCarthy, they're the great story. And also the breeders, John and Diane Fratkin. You know, I was among a chorus of people who didn't understand why they didn't run in the Derby when they had their chance. They had free entry into this race by virtue of winning the El Camino Royale. And they saved $50,000. They bypassed the Derby. They had all their expenses paid. It gave Michael McCarthy even a couple of extra weeks to prepare Rombauer from the Bluegrass. And you see the way it paid the dividend. So there's a lot of cool stories about this. McCarthy is part of the story. Flavian Pratt, who, you know, gets to enjoy winning another. You know, he obviously with Country House, he did win a classic, but he was put up. In this particular case, he gets to win a classic and feel the thrill. Michael McCarthy, you know, former Fletcher assistant for a long period of time, really well liked, really highly regarded. Has won Breeders' Cup races, City of Light, and so forth. That nice CC, I believe this is his 11th Grade One, his first classic. It really was nice that you get kind of a new face and a new storyline moving toward Belmont. They're shipping to Belmont this morning. They'll set up shop to run in New York in 3 weeks. Essentially, it kind of also saved the industry from having to deal with all the Medina Spirit questions and Baffert issues over the next 3 weeks. A very satisfying result all in all.
Yeah, and a nice sub-story there with the win and you're in aspect. We'll have to see if that juices up the El Camino Real Derby field over the next couple of years. But it was nice that win and you're in program worked out for him. Let's shift our attention to Friday and Army Wife getting it done in the Black Eyed Susan. Tough for me, top of the stretch. I used Willful Woman at 13-1, and there were a few strides where I thought Willful Woman's going to be the number two horse, Army Wife the number one horse. I thought, I'm getting some momentum. I may go by these here. And that lasted for a few strides when you saw, Army Wife's not coming back. She wins. Number two, Willful Woman, second. West Point's Lady Traveler runs third. But I was looking at your selections on your page on Friday, and hats off to you. You had Army Wife on top, so a good job there. I was not enamored with Army Wife, but gets it done for Mike Maker, who had a very, very good weekend.
Army Wife was absolutely the most interesting horse at seemingly a price. You knew the 8-1 was never going to hold. Ends up at 9-2. The reason Army Wife is so appealing, coming out of the Gazelle, all you have to do is look at Search Party and Maracuja, who ran so well 2 weeks ago in the Oaks. So, you know, by virtue of her proximity to those two in the Gazelle, Army Wife was the right horse to latch onto, and that was a great way to finish. I had a huge Friday, had a mammoth day at the pick five and the pick four, I was delighted with the way this thing turned out. And there were a couple of parts of Friday that really were surprising. The price on Alda on Friday, how that horse went off at 7-1 for Grand Motion, that was a shocker, frankly, to me. And I thought Friday was the better card. I said early last week that I thought the Friday card looked much more appealing, much more bettable. One of the sidebar stories to the whole weekend, Seth, is absolutely two record days of handle. I mean, they smashed the handle records at the Preakness and on Black Eyed Susan Day. You know, that coming in the face of, you know, of social media, you know, chatter trying to say nobody should bet. It seems like that was, you know, whistling in the dark when it came to the way people handled the 2 days.
Yeah, knowing horse players, that was not going to shake. That was not going to play. Just before we let you go, touch on some other winners. First of all, on the human side, Johnny Velasquez has a really nice weekend. Mike Maker, obviously a nice weekend. But as far as the horses, some of the other ones that kind of stood out to me, the New York bred, some like it, Hot Brown, ran very well. Mean Mary, I had her underneath. I thought she might need this one. Nah, she got out to the front and took them all the way around. And on Friday, a couple that stood out to me were Spice is Nice, I think, could be a player in that division now. As a four-year-old, it just seems like that was maybe her coming out party a little bit after having shown some flashes of brilliance and not getting it done necessarily. I'll also toss out Mighty Mischief on the sprint side. Steve Asmussen with yet another nice sprinter in the barn over the past 3 or 4 years in Mighty Mischief.
What about the undefeated Pennsylvania bred,
yes,
Shupwag?
Yeah.
Who? There was also, and also Critical Way. That was a nice, or excuse me, Firecrow that won the Jim McKay. Joel Rosario in these turf sprints, just unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
No, if folks aren't onto that, and it would be hard to believe, he turf sprints. That's one of those races. There are races and meets where when you're handicapping, you have to look down and circle jockeys and take a second look on some of them. Turf sprints, Rosario is in that category.
Andy Serling that makes the point regularly that they, from his viewpoint, that Joel's the best turf sprint rider in the history of the game. I mean, you know, turf sprints have really only proliferated in the last 30, 35 years, really in the Mid-Atlantic, too. It was you know, this region, the Maryland, Delaware, Pennsylvania, that really popularized the turf sprint. And then it kind of spread because it's easy on horses. Horsemen like it. Their horses can run back, you know, very regularly. So, you know, it's really only in the last few decades it's become very popular. P.J. Campo co-opted them. He saw what was going on in the Mid-Atlantic. And when P.J. was running, you know, the racing office in New York, he started to bring them up. And you know, because of the configurations in New York, you can have a few different versions, including, you know, including New York's own unique take on it, which is the 7/8 turf sprint, which is really kind of fun.
Yeah.
You know, a little longer than a, you know, than a 5 or 6 type and shorter than a mile. You know, a race like the Jaipur, which, you know, grew into a grade one on the basis of the 7/8. So there's a lot to like about it. Joel, though, whether it's, and what's amazing is whether it's a horse that's going to be on or near the lead or whether it's a horse where he typically is even better, which is off the pace. He's got a fabulous head for the clock when it comes to the turf sprinting.
Yeah, no question about it. Steve, we'll let you go, but as always, appreciate the visit. Folks can tune into the radio show this week for, I'm sure, a lot of recap info over the weekend, looking back at Black Eyed Susan, Preakness, and beyond. Sirius and XM's At the Races, as I say, always appreciate the visit. Drive safe the rest of the way. Give my best to Tina.
Okay, there's Tina right there. Drive it along.
Very good.
Wait, there you go. I'm not driving at all. I'm sitting. She drives me home from these events.
Yeah, very good. Again, always appreciate the visit. We will check in again.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
All right. Steve Bick, SiriusXM's At the Races, on his way home after a week on the road down at Baltimore for Preakness coverage. Again, did another great job leading into the Preakness, covering contenders and bringing on the folks in the know on the backstretch. And this week, a lot of great recap as well on the radio side of things. And you can hear replays here in the morning as well. I'm just checking for my promos. We only have the one promo here today. Oh, I'll go back to yesterday, though. Yesterday was, I mentioned it a couple times already this morning, we had the Preakness Day bankroll, and I was playing on behalf of a team. It was a fun day. Everybody wound up with a little under $40 of free money in their accounts after all was said and done. And I was betting during the day, and we had a couple of nice hits. There was a nice triple that I had a 50-cent kind of box, and then I did a dollar keying the horse I liked on top, and that won. So we had it for $1.50, and that came back $300 and something. Hit a nice cold exacta. The one sheet yesterday, the Belmont picks were pretty solid, and there was a cold exacta in the 10th race, I think, yesterday for $145. We had that. I kicked myself, though. So it was a good day. I felt happy with the way I was playing. But I did want a couple of do-overs. That exacta that I hit in for $145 at Belmont, as I said, it was a cold exacta on the one sheet. So I should have hit that a little harder. And that the winner in that race that I think paid $19, the race just before I had the winner on top on the one sheet that paid $23 maybe. And the double into those two races was, I want to say, $260. And I was playing doubles at the various tracks all day long, and that was one I skipped. And I was like, oh, how did I let that one get by? So there were a couple that maybe I left on the table that could have juiced it up a little more for the bankroll team. But as I say, everybody walked away with a little bit of money, and it was a fun day. We had a nice little crowd down here, and everybody was kind of engaged. And when you can kind of key on a $23 horse and a $19 horse, and they're coming down the stretch, people were kind of cheering along to get a little more juice in the bankroll treasure chest, as it were. So it was a fun day yesterday with the bankroll promotion here at the Clubhouse Racebook. A lot of great promotions all the time here at Capital OTB. You can always check the website. One that comes up today, however, I will alert you of the Play the Board Handicapping Contest here at the Clubhouse Racebook. That happens today, this afternoon. Come on down. Take your shot at the Play the Board Handicapping Contest. Maybe you win a little extra money on the afternoon. That all happens here at the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue in Albany. All right, I guess we'll wrap things up. We were wall-to-wall, Pimlico, and why not? It was a great weekend of racing Friday and Saturday. Again, kind of following up the two good days of racing a couple of weeks ago down at Churchill. Really nice stakes action, nice ding-dong finishes. There was some betting opportunities that people could have fun with. Hopefully you did. Hopefully you cashed some money, loaded up. We'll do it all again today. I'll be back in about an hour and a half or so on OTB Live for a Sunday afternoon, taking a look at some of the Sunday action. So should be fun playing along this afternoon as well. We appreciate your tuning in this morning. And I think that about catches me up. I've gone through the promos. We've gone through the show, and it's time to step out. But as I say, I'll be back in about an hour and a half or so with OTB Live for a Sunday afternoon. So we'll see you then.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.